Hey, bub. Welcome back to a brand new episode of Talkin' Snicked, the Wolverine Show. It's the best podcast there is at what it does, and what it does best is tell you about Wolverine. I'm your host, Ryan. Today's episode is our first episode in the month of May, and with our first new episode of the month, we have a brand new theme to explore. This month, we are taking a look back at some of the most important moments from the Omega Red storylines. So we, just like the previous months, are going to do a deep dive this month into Omega Red, take a look at his origins, and then review some of the more important storylines that featured that character. So for today's episode, we are taking a look at Adjectiveless X-Men, or X-Men Volume 2, Issues 4 through 7. All right, bub. So as I was saying, this month is going to be Omega Red. And just like we've done with the previous 2 months where we took a look at Silver Samurai and then Lady Deathstrike, the first storylines that we reviewed, that we took a look at, each of those months were their first appearance storylines. That was both of them happening in the pages of Daredevil Volume 1. So that was pretty interesting. We had, I believe, off the top of my head, oh man, I think it was Daredevil 97. And then for Lady Deathstrike, it was like 197 through 199. I don't remember. I'd have to go back and take a look at them. But it was early stuff. Both those characters debuting in the 1980s. And going on to become Wolverine villains. Eventually they found their ways into the creative hands of Chris Claremont and his creative partners. So again, we saw Silver Samurai very early on in the Daredevil series. And then from there, we saw him go into being a villain of the New Mutants. And then from there, it carried on. And we saw that Silver Samurai became the cousin of Lady Mariko, who of course was Wolverine's paramour at the time in the comics. And so he became a really great villainous foil for the character. And then we explored some of his transformations into being more of like a begrudging ally, into even like an ally that shared respect for Wolverine and had Wolverine's respect as well. And then when we took a look back at Lady Deathstrike, we kind of followed her transformation from just a female character into a character with her own agenda. And then from there, we saw her transformation from the, 100% human Lady Deathstrike into the ruthless cyborg Lady Deathstrike. But we did take a look at some of her more honorable storylines as well. The actions that she took of the more honorable route before we really kind of went in and saw how ruthless she could be when taking on old man Logan. And so we are taking a similar journey with the character of Omega Red over the course of this month. And so I just thought it was fitting to start with his origin, his first appearance. So I've discussed at length before the time where Chris Claremont left the X-Books. He had come in around 1975 as the main writer on the series, following the hot relaunch of X-Men with Giant Size X-Men, under the careful eye of Len Wein and Dave Cockrum. The two of them, resurrected the X-Men story. They resurrected the X-Men title thanks to the popularity of Giant Size X-Men number one. And it introduced a new generation of readers to a new generation of X-Men. These X-Men were adults, just like the original five X-Men had become. They were seasoned veterans in many ways, even though I think the youngest Colossus at like 19 had the least amount of experience. But other characters on the team like Storm and Banshee, they had been around, and they had a pretty decent backstory. Obviously, it was Storm's first appearance in Giant Size, same with Nightcrawler, Colossus, those characters. But, other characters like Wolverine had storylines before appearing in those books, and then, of course, continued on. And as we learned throughout Claremont's run, Storm had such a great backstory, same with Nightcrawler, Colossus even. And he took over the writing. The first storyline that they did, it was kind of co-written by Claremont and Len Wein. And then, of course, Claremont took the reins himself and ran with it, and ran with it for 16 years. You know, he was the architect of all of the best stuff about the X-Men that we fans seem to love today. And there was not a whole lot of fanfare surrounding his exit. It wasn't, this big thing where he announced his retirement from the book and was able to kind of do a farewell tour. Unfortunately, with the way Marvel editorial went, there was a lot of editorial edicts that stepped on the toes of Chris Claremont, and he was seen himself having to relinquish much of his creative control over the X books to a new generation of artists who were becoming superstars in their own right as they galvanized a new and younger fan base onto the X-Men books. And by the end of 1991, Chris Claremont had had enough, and he left both X titles. He was writing both Uncanny X-Men and X-Men, and the December of 1991 issues, those were the last issues that he wrote. So by the end of 1991, he was off the books. And a lot of the writing duties then fell onto the artists. Jim Lee was drawing adjectiveless X-Men, and Wils Portacio was drawing Uncanny X-Men. And after Chris Claremont left the books, much of the storytelling fell onto their shoulders. Now, they were plotting the stories, they were coming up with the ideas, you know, the overarching ideas, and then of course they were drawing their respective books. And in order to help assist them with their writing duties, they brought in John Byrne to script Uncanny X-Men, they brought in Scott Lobdell to script Adjectiveless X-Men. They had also brought in Fabian Nicieza, and the three of those guys, Byrne and Lobdell and Nicieza, they were kind of going back and forth and handling the scripting duties, you know, writing the dialogue and stuff, while Jim Lee and Wils Portacio and guys like Rob Liefeld on X-Force were coming up with the overall storylines. And a lot of the stuff that was introduced in 1992 wasn't really all that great. You know, some of it was dangling storylines that were closed out from the Claremont era, but a lot of this was, you know, the brainchild of these creators. And with X-Men number 4, this was the first book that Claremont had nothing to do with. It was the first book that was published in 1992. The cover date of this particular issue was like January 10th, 1992. So it probably came out a little bit before that. It may have hit shelves as early as, you know, October, November 1991. But either way, publication's sake, 1992 is the year without Claremont. It was the year that Claremont walked away. And everything from January of 92 on was brand new stuff. This was undiscovered country. And both of the titles at that time, X-Men and Uncanny X-Men, saw the introduction of brand new non-Claremont characters for the first time in a long time. It was X-Men number 4 was the first book that Claremont didn't write or plot or anything in the X-Men. And it was off the top of my head at like Uncanny 287, maybe Uncanny 281, somewhere around there was the first issue of Uncanny X-Men that Chris Claremont did not write himself, who did not plot. He was not credited in any way with the story of that book. And that was the issue that saw the introduction of Bishop. So Bishop was introduced in the pages of Uncanny X-Men. And on the X-Men side, we actually had a brand new villain being introduced. And that villain is Omega Red. Now, Omega Red first appears in X-Men number 4, but his whole appearance is part of an ongoing story that takes place between X-Men 4 and 7. So 4, 5, 6, and 7 are all one continuous storyline that involves Omega Red. And as you'll see as we get into it, Omega Red isn't the main villain of the storyline. He isn't necessarily the guy that's driving everything here. He is a character that is part of an organization, and therefore he gets introduced as this new villain from Wolverine's mysterious past. You know, one of the things that Claremont did throughout his tenure on the X-Books was keep Logan's past as mysterious as possible. We had hints of, and things regarding Weapon X, but we didn't have that storyline told until, you know, the early 1990s. I can't remember if that was in the pages of Marvel Comics Presents before or after Claremont left the X books. I want to say it was right about that same time. But again, off the top of my head, I'm not remembering exactly what year it was. But even when Claremont had the chance to write a Wolverine solo title, or at least to launch a Wolverine solo title and write the first arc or two, he kept it in the present day of what was happening in the line of X-Men comics. So the X-Men were in the Outback and Wolverine was part of the team, but sometimes he would leave the team and go on his own adventures. And so those were the stories that Claremont was telling in the pages of the Wolverine ongoing. He didn't go back and mine Wolverine's past. He really only gave us glimpses. You know, we knew about the Weapon X program. We knew about Wolverine's time as a spy. We knew that at one point Wolverine had been on the Alpha Flight team and worked for Department H. Like, we knew all of this stuff, but we didn't have the details. The mystery was all there. And one of the first storylines, one of the first things that the new creative teams did as soon as Claremont was off the books was they started dangling bits and pieces of Wolverine's past almost right away. Like, hey, Claremont's not here to tell us not to, so let's start revealing some stuff. And so this storyline has to do with someone from Wolverine's past who was an antagonist of Wolverine in his CIA days. So at some point in the 50s and 60s, the Weapon X team had Wolverine, right? And we know that they laced his bones with adamantium and turned him into a weapon. And we know that eventually at some point, Wolverine escapes from the Weapon X compound. He goes feral while he's living in the wilderness until he's found by James and Heather Hudson. Or James McDonald Hudson and Heather Hudson. It's only later that we find out that Wolverine wasn't just taken by Weapon X and experimented on and then he escaped. Like, that wasn't a matter of days or weeks. Like, it was years that he was in this program. And while he was in this program, he had all these different personas and he would go on these missions and then things would get erased or memories would be replaced and things like that. We learned this a lot later during the Shiva scenario stories or the Return to Weapon X stories once Larry Hama takes over the Wolverine ongoing. And we, in this storyline, kind of find out that, oh, at some point Wolverine's past, he was in the CIA and he was on this like three-man team with a couple other characters who factor into this story later on. And one of their missions that didn't quite go exactly according to plan, there was this antagonistic character, and that's who we find out is Omega Red. So I feel like I'm almost starting to kind of jump around and not make sense. So before I lose you all completely, let me jump into X-Men number 4. So like I was saying, this was the first issue that wasn't written by Chris Claremont. So we actually have Jim Lee plotting the story and providing all the pencil work. We have John Byrne writing the script, so writing the actual dialogue and narrations and stuff. We have Scott Williams on inks. We have Tom Orzechowski on letters. And we have Joe Rosas on colors. And, you know, it's Jim Lee X-Men. It doesn't disappoint. The artwork is fantastic. Even for the early 90s, like, they were still making strides in the digital coloring world and the inking world and things like that. So it wasn't all quite as not easy, but it wasn't quite as streamlined. And there wasn't as much freedom when it came to coloring and all that. But even so, this artwork is dynamic. By today's standards, it still holds up as fantastic artwork, fantastic inking, fantastic colors. You can't look at a Jim Lee X book and not be impressed by his ability to not just draw these big action panels on, you know, one-page spreads or even two-page spreads, but even like his thumbnails and stuff, the smaller panels are really fantastic. Like, his work is just so good. And it's not just the characters. Like, he's great at drawing buildings and landscapes and rooms, you know, technological rooms and all kinds of stuff. So, I mean, from that angle, like these are going to be four pretty impressive issues. But there is a, not necessarily a disjointed feeling, like everything progresses as it should, but the plot kind of moves at almost too quick of a pace when it comes to certain things. And John Byrne, like, yeah, he drew X-Men for a long time. He collaborated on stories with Chris Claremont. For the most part, they got along until like the end of their run together and stuff. But bringing him back in and but not having him do artwork was very different. Like the books that he had wrote and drawn himself, like the first, 15 or so issues of Alpha Flight, they're good, but they're not quite, they're not great. And I think the issue become, the issue here is the pacing. It's like sometimes the pacing doesn't match with how dynamic the art is. And so it just seems a little off tonally, where we have the, like the dialogue wise, it's almost like they're having just a regular conversation, but the body language, the posing is like this, this really fantastic fight scene or something like that. And it doesn't quite flow exactly right. Not like it did with Claremont, but either way, this story opens up on an island in the South Pacific. And in this island that is not inhabited because it's a volcanic island, in this island is a secret laboratory. And in this secret laboratory, there is a person strapped to what appears to be like a, some sort of like a medical bed or something. And this person is laying there and these ninja looking people are like encircling this person. And they all walk up and they place their hand on this body, on this person who's asleep or passed out or comatose or what. And they all like immediately turn to dust. And this person wakes up and we find out it's a bunch of hand ninja, you know, ninja that work for the hand. And they've offered to sacrifice themselves because their boss, Matsuo Tsuriyama, he needs this person to be revived. And this person is in like some sort of suspended animation type deal. And in order to jolt him awake, he needs to absorb a bunch of life force. And so they willingly sacrifice themselves. Of course, this person wakes up after however long he's been in the state that he is and like immediately lashes out and attacks the actual scientists that are there as well, taking them out, like five more people. So it was like 20 people willingly sacrificed themselves, and then five more lives were taken unwillingly. But this character is now fully awake. He's been fully revitalized, and in walks Matsuo Tsuriyama himself, the leader of the hand. At this point in the comics, the hand is led by this Matsuo Tsuriyama guy. And he comes in and he introduces himself and he's like, hey, you know, you don't know me, but I think you and I have a common enemy. And he shows this recently revived person a picture of Wolverine without his mask on. So it's a picture of Logan. And the guy immediately sees the picture and he's like, Logan. And, you know, so the two of them kind of bond. They're like, hey, you know, common enemy and all that. And I believe at this point, the guy refers to himself as Omega Red. Like, he's like, I'm no longer the dude I used to be. Now I'm Omega Red. And like, I'm going to get Wolverine. So it's like, boom. Now we don't necessarily need to know the motivation, just that this guy's been comatose for a long time. And he's been recently revived by a member of the hand in order to track down Logan for whatever reason. Again, we don't really quite know the reasons because this is still the opening sequence and we don't necessarily get our answers right away. In fact, after this the scene changes and we get like quite a bit of pages of just the X-Men hanging out. Like a lot of the rest of this particular issue is exposition, but not even like major exposition. It's just kind of like slice of life. So we go and we check in with the X-Men. You know, it's Omega Red is going to find Wolverine. And so let's see what Wolverine's doing. Well, he's chilling with the X-Men. So let's see what they're all doing. So we actually see that Wolverine and Rogue are partnered up against Gambit and Jubilee in a game of 2-on-2 basketball. and things are not going well for Wolverine and Rogue. It turns out Gambit is really dang good at basketball, and Jubilee is athletic enough that she can handle playing against Wolverine and Rogue. And so Gambit's natural agility, his natural athleticism, has like made him the superstar of this little pickup game. It's really fun. And I know that this particular sequence, like, it's done again, like later on in like the pages of Uncanny X-Men, I think there's another time when Gambit's out there playing basketball and he gets into a fight with like Bishop or something. Like, it's funny because, you know, up until this point, Claremont would show the X-Men playing baseball and stuff a lot. But now, you know, it's a new generation. It's 1992. So I think we're what, a year into the great dynasty of the Chicago Bulls from like 91 to 98, when they won like five NBA titles or something like that. Six NBA titles, whatever it was. I can't remember. I'm not a basketball guy. So off the top of my head, I'm not remembering, but you know, basketball had kind of come up as like, hey, you know, remember this other sport? Turns out like it's super huge. And you know, the reason for that is in the late 80s, we had that historic UCLA run with NCAA titles. And then, of course, it's the era of Michael friggin' Jordan and the Chicago Bulls. Like, it's just starting. So basketball was coming. It was like this up and coming major sport. And, you know, with the Jim Lee and Will Sportacio and those guys being young, hip guys, they were into basketball probably more than baseball. And when they drew the X-Men playing sports, it was basketball. So either way, turns out Gambit is really dang good. Almost a ringer. He'd probably be able to play in the NBA if he felt like it. You know, maybe if the Pelicans existed back then, he could have joined the team, you know, played onto the team. Either way, we get like a bunch of pages of this, and we get a few more pages of like a secondary plot that's going on with Banshee and Moira. And this is mostly because of what happened in issues 1 through 3 of Adjectiveless X-Men. It was this whole thing where, like, in the past, Magneto was this villain, and so Moira like de-aged him down into a baby, and then he aged back up into a human and like was really, or not a human, but into an adult. And so he was like, all right, well, the X-Men are like my biggest enemies, so like I'm gonna have to go after them, and like it's all Moira's fault. I might be confusing that with a Silver Age thing, and then this was something that maybe Moira just wiped his mind for, or like erased his memories. Moira did something when he was like at the height of his villainy, you know, because for a while there during the Claremont run, like Magneto was a redeemed hero. Like, he was the headmaster for the New Mutants and stuff, until eventually he hooked up with the Hellfire Club and eventually started slipping back into his villainous ways. And then Moira did something, and it was a while, but then eventually Magneto got over it. And so like, he's super pissed at the X-Men and Moira especially. And like, because of that, Moira is starting to have like this awful PTSD about what she did to Magneto, and like her like crushing guilt and everything. And so we get a couple of storylines that set up some stuff with Moira and Banshee eventually leaving the X-Men and going back to Muir Island and staying there, despite all the stuff that happened during the Muir Island saga. But either way, we get a few more pages of that. And then eventually we have Gambit asking Rogue out like on a date. You know, I think it was after the basketball game. She says something like, you know, I had a great time kicking your butt, Cajun. And he's like, well, you know, Cher, I'm super into you. So like, let's say we go out on a date. And so she agrees. She puts on a, you know, a real fancy dress and everything. She looks lovely. And so the two of them decide that they're going to go out, and they hop on Gambit's motorcycle. And of course, at this point, like, the rest of the X-Men, at least the rest of the blue team, come out and they're like, whoa, like, you can't just go on a date. Like, we're going to tag along and be your chaperones, because, you know, Mr. LeBeau, you are a bit of a scoundrel, and we know that, you know, Rogue can take care of herself, but, you know, for all we know, she might be susceptible to your charms. So like, we're going to tag along and like chaperone you guys on this date. So Wolverine and Jubilee and the Beast like pile into what appears to be a Jeep, and they start tagging along. And as Gambit and Rogue are driving down the road on the motorcycle, they like run into a tripwire. that's just like strung along the road. It knocks the bike down. Gambit goes tumbling. Rogue goes flying off. And they're immediately attacked by like this group of ninja looking dude. They look like hand ninjas, but instead of, you know, katana or sai or kunai or anything like Kusarga, anything like that, they've got like machine guns. Cause you know, it's the 90s and 90s ninjas use Uzis and stuff, I guess. And they wear sunglasses at night and all that, cause they're friggin' cool and everything. So they attack the X-Men and they start subduing the X-Men until of course Wolverine arrives and he's like, whoa, hey, I'm not having any of this. Like, you can't attack my, you know, four of my greatest friends and think that you're going to get away with it. And then he is immediately attacked by Omega Red, and Wolverine recognizes him and he's like, what the heck? This can't be, like, you're dead, Arcady. And at that point, Omega Red is like, ah, well, you're wrong. You know, you're right in a sense, but you're wrong. See, you're right. Arcady is dead, but I am now Omega Red and I am very much alive. And so he wraps his little tentacles around Wolverine and the issue comes to an end. So that was the first appearance of Omega Red. We have a brief little introduction that sees him wake up, establishes his ties with Wolverine from the past and therefore his hatred of Wolverine. And then we see this plan put in place where this group of hand ninjas, probably the ones that work for Matsuo, of course, partnered up with Omega Red to attack Wolverine and the X-Men. And it's not a bad introduction. Like, this is a pretty cool issue. Like, yeah, like I already kind of mentioned the pacing and stuff is a little strange just with the dialogue and all that. But for the most part, they get their point across. We know that things are going on. There was one little like one page interlude there at the in the middle of that issue that showed not more of Omega Red, but it did show more of Matsuo. And it turns out that Matsuo, the leader of the Hand, is also allied with these two German siblings, the Von Struckers, which is Andrea and Andreas. And they are mutants, and they're part of this mutant group called the Upstarts. And I believe that the Von Struckers were utilized by Claremont close to the end of his run, and it was one of like the dangling threads that he had left open. And so I think they just kind of went with that, like, oh, hey, there was that one scene with Forge, I think, on like a random island, and the Von Struckers had to get in a plane and take off, and they'd made mention of the fact that there was, you know, something afoot, there was a game afoot. And so we're starting to finally get that storyline. And I think a lot of people attribute the Upstarts storyline, this weird game that they have where they're like part of this thing with the Games Master. And it's this group of like evil, but younger mutants, you know, like these are children of big time villains, like Sebastian Shaw's child is one of the Upstarts. And of course, Fenris, who their father, I think, is Baron Von Strucker, you know, the world famous Hydra, one of the Hydra leaders, you know. And then there's a couple other characters. There's like this woman named Sienna Blaze who ties into the Upstarts and stuff. And then this guy from the future named Trevor Fitzroy, and that introduces Bishop and all that stuff. It was this whole big thing. And it was like that first year that Claremont leaves, those comics from like 1992, they all kind of dealt with the Upstarts and this weird game that was going on. And basically they were just like these evil mutants who would get points by pretty much like taking out other mutants. And they would get more points if it was like a bigger, more well-known mutant or members of a particular mutant team and stuff. And it was always just like a very strange storyline, but I feel like Jim Lee and Portasio and like Mark Silvestri, even Liefeld, of course, like I feel like they all get credit for introducing this weird concept, but I feel like it was picked up from like a dangling Claremont thread. Cause like I have distinct memories of the Von Struckers appearing earlier, even with ties to like Matsuo and like this stuff, like this, all of these things were being planted. Like Psylocke had already been turned into, you know, had already taken over the body of the former Japanese assassin that worked for Matsuo. So a lot of these plot threads were there. It just hadn't really come to fruition yet. And so we're finally starting to see those characters, like, you know, start to make their moves against the bigger, more well-known mutants like the X-Men. And so this storyline is really the first that we see in the pages of X-Men, at least, that shows some of these groups. And so we see in this one that Matsuo has aligned himself with Fenris. And so in order to get at Wolverine, they have resurrected this former, you know, evil mutant Arcady. Eventually we find out his name is Arcady Rosevich, but right now he's just known as Arcady. And so that takes us directly into issue number 5. And so we start to get a little bit more of the storyline here as we get further into the villains and their various motivations. But first, the creative team. So again, we still have Jim Lee on both the pencils and the plot. And then this time we also have, in addition to Scott Williams on inks, we also have Art Tiebert, Bob Viacek, and Joe Rubinstein. And then instead of just Tom Orzechowski on letters, we have Tom and Lois on letters. So it's kind of funny because this issue is actually less pages long on Marvel Unlimited. Like this one's only 19 versus number 4, which was like 24 pages long. But this particular issue has, I think, 2 double page spreads. And so I imagine those take a lot longer to draw. Now, I could be wrong because I'm not an artist and I've never drawn a comic, but I'm pretty sure that like the double page spreads take a lot longer to draw just because it's such a bigger picture, you know, and there's so much more that can go wrong. And again, like I was saying, there's like 2 of them, like 2 different double page spreads in this particular issue. So perhaps that what happened during the production for this issue is it was taking Jim Lee longer to draw. And because of that, they got behind on the inking or whatever. And so rather than him turning in, you know, X pages per day, he turned in a bunch of pages late. And so it wasn't, you know, Scott Williams didn't have as much time to ink them all. So they had to bring in other inkers to pick up the slack. That usually seems to be the case when we see things like this, where, you know, multiple artists have to come in and draw certain pages, you know, or maybe that particular artist had drawn a page 2 or 3 times and wasn't happy with it. So they had to bring in someone else to just draw a page or two. And in this case, you know, 4 different inkers, that my guess would be that it just, they got behind because of how much art they were putting into this particular issue. So they had to bring in a few more people to kind of pick up that slack and keep it on its like 2-week publication schedule or whatever it was. But either way, the issue begins, like I said, kind of picking up where the last one left off. So the last one we saw Gambit and Rogue, and then of course Wolverine, Beast, and Jubilee all ambushed like right outside the X mansion by Omega Red and a bunch of hand ninjas. And of course, you know, these things can't really happen so close to the Xavier Institute grounds without the other X-Men noticing what's going on. Of course, Cerebro automatically picks up the, you know, distress signals from the X-Men who are now attacked, and it also picked up like an unidentified mutant signature because, you know, Omega Red is right outside the fence of the Xavier Institute. And so naturally Cerebro's like, hey, you know, there's a mutant right there, like a mutant that I've never come across before, an unknown mutant. And so Forge, who is, I think at this point he was mostly being used on the gold team in the pages of Uncanny X-Men. But, you know, one thing about the Xavier Mansion, even though there's 2 different teams of X-Men operating out of there, they're all living together, you know? And so sometimes they're all around each other. And so you'll see different X-Men popping up here and there in different books. Like there wasn't some editorial thing that was like, oh, because these 5 characters are on the gold team and these 6 characters are on the blue team, we can't see them in each other's books. Like, yeah, they were popping up in the other books all the time. And so in this one, we actually have Forge who gets the notification from Cerebro that there's an unidentified mutant and that all the X-Men are, you know, in danger. So he immediately alerts Cyclops and Psylocke and Colossus. And they hop into a black, here's what I don't quite get, because it's like, how far did they get? Apparently they got really far, because these 3 X-Men, they hop into a Blackbird and fly all the way out of, apparently if they fly all the way out of Westchester County, And yet the people that are like that kidnapped the X-Men and the, you know, ambushed the X-Men, they're not even that far away. Cause the very next, but you turn the page, the Blackbird takes off, you turn the page and you see like these two ambulances driving down the road. They're not real ambulances. Those are Hand Ninja in disguise. And they've kidnapped the X-Men. They've kidnapped Beast and Jubilee, Rogue and Gambit. And they're driving back into Salem Center in New York. And the very first caption reads, "While not too far away on one of the many country lanes that wind their way into Salem Center." So it's like, did the X-Men really have to get in a Blackbird so that they could fly, you know, like 8 miles? Like, I don't know, whatever. Either way, the X-Men at the mansion hop into a Blackbird and they take off. You'd think that the X-Men would have like an X-Mobile, you know, that would fly really fast, or like, you know, battle cycles or something. How many toys do we have of like Wolverine's, you know, claw cycle and stuff, that you'd think that they would have that sort of stuff laying around the X-Mansion? They wouldn't have to get in the Blackbird just to fly like as less than 10 miles away, but whatever. It makes for a cool looking panel at least. Either way, inside these ambulances, the four X-Men are actually in one by themselves. Like, rather than splitting up the team and like putting two in one and then two in the other, they put all four of them in one of the ambulances. I'm not sure why. Logistically, it seems like that was a little dangerous. Either way, they've got the X-Men kind of shackled in this ambulance. But unfortunately, you know, they didn't even take off Gambit's coat, and they chained him up. And yeah, he can't reach his pockets or whatever, but come on, it's Gambit, like the sleight of hand gambler. Naturally, he has a literal ace up his sleeve. So he's able to pop it out, charge it up, throw it, like blow up the ambulance. And the X-Men, the four X-Men are able to escape, and they're fighting back against the Hand Ninja in the other one. They realize like, oh crap, like Wolverine's not with us. I wonder if he's in the other ambulance. But it doesn't really make any difference because the Blackbird has caught up with the two ambulances. And so Psylocke and Colossus and Cyclops just like jump down. You know, Colossus jumps down, immediately, you know, bonks the two guys' heads together. Cyclops lands on the hood of the other ambulance and just unleashes an optic blast right into the driver's face. And then Psylocke, like telepathically, she's searching for Wolverine, and she was like, oh wait, oh, like get out of the thing, it's about to blow. And it turns out that like the Hand Ninja have been told, like, if you can't capture the X-Men, just blow them up, man. Like, we're mostly just want Wolverine for a very specific reason, and we'll reveal that in due time. But like, just whatever, like, we kidnapped them, but now they're escaping, so let's just blow ourselves up with the X-Men, you know, all around. But luckily, you know, Colossus and everybody was able to throw all the X-Men out of the way, and then just, you know, go into his steel form. So when the ambulance exploded, didn't really make any difference. Like, none of the X-Men were hurt, but they did find Wolverine's mask in the wreckage. And they were like, oh dear, what happened to Wolverine? He's not here. So clearly he was kidnapped by someone else, maybe. So they decide, you know, the X-Men decide, let's head back and ask Professor Xavier what's going on with Wolverine. Luckily, we, the reader, we don't have to wait that long. We just turn the page and we get to see what's going on with Wolverine. And so we see that Wolverine has had quite the battle. His costume's all ripped to shreds and everything, and he's going toe-to-toe with Omega Red. And we get a little bit of backstory here, though not very much. We get the sense that they've tussled together in the past, and Wolverine was the one to blame for Omega Red going into that like comatose state that he was in at the beginning of last issue. But ultimately, you know, Wolverine here is outclassed by Omega Red, and it's because he has his death factor. So Omega Red's mutant power is that he can release this like pheromone that is a death factor. He releases this pheromone. It makes the people around him sick. And the sicker they get, you know, it's because he is infecting them with this death field that's like absorbing their life energy into him. And he doesn't use his pheromone part too often because he mostly can't control it. But he also has been upgraded with these metallic tentacles that come out of either wrist, on the inside, right underneath the palm. He's got these tentacles that come out. It makes for a really cool visual, really cool looking character that he's able to do this. But he kind of is able to channel his death factor through those tentacles. And so that's how he's able to defeat his enemies, because he's a psychopath and likes to be up close and personal. But you kind of get the sense that, like, because he was recently revived, he's still somewhat weak. And so this whole time he's been battling Wolverine, he's kind of been letting his death factor pheromones get out to infect Wolverine and slowly sap Wolverine's life energy away, which is why, as the battle is raging on, Omega Red is not losing. In fact, it's Wolverine who keeps tiring out. And I love this. Like, you can tell that the people that wrote this grew up as fans of, like, cartoons and stuff in the 80s, because it does the traditional, like, 1980s cartoon villain thing where there's this action sequence happening and then the camera just kind of zooms out. And you actually see that a different set of bad guys is watching all of this happen on camera. That's exactly what goes on here. So, like, we're watching this battle, and then we start getting this narration, and we see that this group of evil people is actually watching this battle on, like, a monitor. And of course, a few of these characters we'd already seen in the previous issue: Matsuo Tsuriyama, leader of the Hand, as well as Andrea and Andreas von Strucker, also known as Fenris. And then we also see that Dr. Cornelius, one of the head doctors on the Weapon X program, is actually part of this little cabal as well. And they're all watching as Omega Red kind of is starting to, like, have fun with Wolverine as he's slowly defeating him. And of course they're like, well, we're not going to let Wolverine die. So we'll get in contact. We'll tell Omega Red to go ahead and, cut the attack. You've knocked him out, bring him in and all this. And that's exactly what happens. Omega Red just kind of, like, stares at Wolverine. He stops attacking and he just lets Wolverine kind of lay in the snow, beaten, as Wolverine slowly loses consciousness. He's just sitting there, like, just grinning in his face. And it does, like, as Wolverine's looking at this face, he's starting to have a flashback. He actually remembers this face. Like, he knows that it's Arcady, but he doesn't really know why. He, like, so far Wolverine's like, I know this guy, but, like, how do I know this guy? Like, from where? I know his name, but I don't know why I know it. And so as he's drifting off into unconsciousness here, he has a quick little flash of his memory to a time when he was in the CIA. And we find out that, at one point in the past, Wolverine and this big, tall, blonde dude and one other dude were in this little strike force. And at one point, they had a mission where they were going up against this, like, evil Russian mutant. But it's a quick flash. Like, it's just a long enough flash where Wolverine's like, was it in Berlin, like, 30 years ago? Like, why am I... I'm seeing this memory and I'm just getting the feeling that it was in Berlin, like, 30 years ago. And then he, like, wakes up again and he's no longer in the snow. They've brought him in and now he's in this lab, and he's been tied down by all these various metal tentacles and stuff. And we see Matsuo and Dr. Cornelius again, and the rest of this little cabal. Omega Red's there and Fenris is there. And they're all trying to, like, torture some information out of Wolverine. And what it is that they're looking for is this item from the past called the Carbonadium Synthesizer. Carbonadium? Did I say that right? Yes. Carbonadium Synthesizer. And apparently this little device was the subject of that same mission that Logan had just had his, like, random flashback to. Either way, it turns out that, Fenris, they're part of the upstarts. They want to win the game because they want to start a Fourth Reich, which is fine. That's good enough for Matsuo because he just wants to take over, like, Japan and Madripoor and pretty much the rest of Asia and put them under the control of the Hand So because their goals don't overlap, they're able to work together, and they've kind of brought in this Omega Red character because he's pretty much a mercenary for hire who just wants to kill Wolverine and, you know, other mutants too. So he kind of just fits in. But that's pretty much it. Like, we finally get the motivation for this quick little storyline. They need the carbonadium synthesizer. Now, again, the only reason I think they want the carbonadium synthesizer is because they want it for Omega Red. Like, Omega Red specifically is the one that needs that item. But I think they know if they help Omega Red get what he wants, that he'll work for them. And so, you know, his interests become their interests. Either way, like, Wolverine kind of doesn't really remember exactly what's going on. So he's just kind of sitting there just listening to all this stuff, trying to allow himself to heal enough so that he can escape when he needs to. Either way, like, as this whole thing is going on, we actually see someone in the vent of this building place who's watching them and is talking to someone else, where he's like, "Major, they've got Logan, and, you know, what do you want me to do?" And the person on the other side of the radio is like, "Eh, we'll just, you know, keep watching, stay on them, report back in an hour. If anything's changed, we'll figure out, you know, where we need to go from there." We also take a quick second to check back in with the X-Men. Now, I had mentioned that there was, like, the appearance of Bishop and the introduction of Trevor Fitzroy. So that's all kind of happening in the pages of Uncanny X-Men, but also in the pages of Uncanny X-Men, the Hellfire Club is being attacked by the upstarts as well. And so Emma Frost has reached out to the X-Men for help. So right now we're kind of having a briefing where Xavier's like, "All right, here's what we're going to do. The blue team, you are going to go find Wolverine. We have a feeling that he's, you know, he's over and he's, I think they say he's in Connecticut." And so they're going to send him to Connecticut, maybe, or that might have been the other. Oh, no, they know that Wolverine's in Berlin. So the blue team is going to Berlin, and then the gold team is going to the airport in Connecticut, because that's where they were able to trace, like, Emma Frost to. So it's fun that we get this little, you know, splash page and all that. And then we get, like, a page or two of the X-Men kind of telling each other, like, "Hey, good luck." You know, Cyclops kisses Jean goodbye and says, like, "You know, good luck on your mission," and all that. And then, of course, Forge is like, "Hey, you know, since I'm not on really either of these teams right now, I'm just kind of here, like, let's hang out and play a game of chess." And Xavier's like, "Hey, that works for me." And then Banshee, meanwhile, is like, "Hey, you know, Moira took off in a cab at the end of the last issue. But the podcast host didn't cover it because it wasn't really part of the story. So I'm going to head out. I think she's going back to Muir Island. So that's where I'm going." And Xavier's like, "Yeah, man, no problem, Sean. Like, you do you, man. Like, you got to do what you got to do for your boo." And so we go back to Berlin now. We check in with Wolverine. And we see that, like, he's been nursed back to health enough that they can torture him again. So they're like, they have him in this one little room where Omega Red's there, and he's pretty much just, like, trying to torture Wolverine for the location of the carbonadium synthesizer. And Wolverine's like, "Yeah, bite me, you know, I don't really know what you're talking about." And then the guy that was watching from the vent, we find out his name's Maverick, and he's talking to some dude named Major, and he pretty much tells him, like, "I think they're gonna kill Logan. Like, I probably can't let that stand." And so Mission HQ is like, "Yeah, you're right, Maverick. Like, do your thing. Get in there and save Wolverine." So he, like, turns the lights off, and that's enough of a distraction for Wolverine to, like, cut his way out of his little contraption, and then Maverick to get back to his hiding place in the vents. But either way, Wolverine is free now. He, of course, takes out the guards, and he's holding this weird canister that I don't even know where it came from or whatever. But Omega Red's like, "Hey, bro, come on, like, put the canister down. Let's talk this out like gentlemen." And as Wolverine's, like, running away from Omega Red, because even though he was strong enough to escape, he's still not quite strong enough to really fight back against Omega Red at this point. As he's running away, he has, like, another flashback And this time we get to see a little bit more of that same mission. You know, last time we saw it was like Wolverine and there was like a blonde dude and there was some other guy like way off in the background. And Wolverine was holding the picture of like a Russian dude who was clearly the bad guy here. Well, it turns out that there was some sort of like a weird experiment going on involving that guy. And one of the scientists on that team was a double agent, or at least was defecting away from the government, you know, away from the USSR, and was trying to join the CIA. And so the mission for this team was twofold. It was go in there, get the carbonadium synthesizer, and also rescue this scientist lady. And so we see the team consisted of Wolverine and someone who, you know, a big blonde dude. And then this time we actually see the third guy on that team is Maverick, who we were just introduced to a few pages earlier, hiding out in the vent. So we kind of find out, oh, the dude in the vent has ties to all of this stuff as well. And there's even a scene where in the memory, as they're trying to escape, Omega Red busts up through the floor. And then that's actually what jogs Wolverine back to the present, because that's what's happening again. He had gone up a level in the building and Omega Red just busted up through the floor using his tentacles and was like, hey, where do you think you're going, runt? You know? And Wolverine is like, yeah, I'm just going to jump out the window, man, because I can heal. So he does. He just dives head first through this window. Turns out he was like 7 or 8 stories, but he jumps out and disappears. You know, by the time Omega Red like gets to the window and looks down to see where Wolverine is nowhere to be found. And so at this point, Matsuo comes up to him and he's like, ah, way to bail on that one, you dingus. And so Omega Red, you know, picks him up and he's like, you dare, you know, say those words to me? And Matsuo's like, yeah, dude, like I brought you back to life. So yeah, I'm going to talk to you like you're the dummy that you are when you do dumb things, dummy. And now we go and we actually check in with the X-Men who are on the Blackbird. And I think they've just landed in Berlin, or they're about to land in Berlin, because they're in Germany and they're trying to like lock onto Wolverine's like, you know, mutant profile. Either way, we then go check in with Wolverine directly and we see that Maverick was the one that rescued him after he jumped out of the window. And Maverick pretty much tells him like, hey, bub, like you need to get your healing factor under control and like get back up to 100%, because like I have a mission here that I have to carry out. And frankly, like you're going to want to carry it out as well. Yeah. And at first Wolverine doesn't really recognize who he is and stuff, but you know, they do what they do. Meanwhile, the X-Men arrive and like, that's pretty much it. The issue ends, it actually ends with like a page or two of setting up the storyline that's going on with Longshot and Dazzler, and I think Boom Boom and Lila Cheney, this sort of storyline, but I'm not too familiar with that one, so I'm not really spending a whole lot of time. Either way, the X-Men have arrived, you know, the rest of the blue team, and they've split up. I think Jubilee went with Gambit and Rogue, and then the other team was Cyclops, Psylocke, and Beast. So they land in Germany, and I think they're like the mysterious new mutant. We found his aura thing, and then we also found Wolverine. So you guys go over there and we're gonna go over here. And that takes us into issue number 6. So this is the third issue in the storyline, and it's another kind of a plot twister. We now know who the villains are of the story and we know what their motivations are, but we haven't quite figured out exactly what their ties to Logan's past are. We've gotten some glimpses, and we know that we know that Omega Red factors into it somewhere along the lines. So like I said, this one takes us into number 6. It adds a few more plot twists and it's super fun. This one, again, plot and pencils from Jim Lee, although this time the scripting work was done by Scott Lobdell. The inks were all done by Art Tiebert. The colors were all done by Joe Rosas. And the letters were all done by Tom Orzechowski. So they're back to like, you know, the regular size creative team. So I think it's probably because there's a lot less double page spreads in this one. I think Jim Lee did too many in the last issue and was like, yeah, I'm not going to do that again. If I have to, I'll just do like a one page spread here and there. But like, yeah, I'm just going back to the regular couple of panels or, you know, 5-6 panels per page, whatever. So it is probably easier to get this one done without any of those delays. And so this one, even more so than the last one, picks up right where it left off. Like right away we see, and I was wrong, right away we see Cyclops, Jubilee, and Beast, and they are somewhere in Berlin. They are infiltrating this building, and they're actually at the building where Logan just was. You know, the building that he escaped from, the building where the Upstarts and Omega Red are hanging out, as well as all the Hand Ninja. So it's Cyclops, Beast, Jubilee, and they're breaking it. And they're not even like doing it quietly. Like Wolverine or Cyclops is just blasting people all over the place and everything. And they don't get very far either. Like I said, they're not really quiet about it. And so by the time they get to the second page of the comic, the whole facility is alerted to their presence, and Omega Red has already been dispatched to fight them. So we just get like the second page of the issue is the splash page of Omega Red just like decking Beast right in the face. And it happens so fast because Cyclops and Jubilee have like, they've barely even had a chance to respond other than to yell like, look out. And Omega Red just pops right in and he's like, aha. And so we actually get some backstory here, but it's not actually told in any dialogue. It's just told in a narration. It says several decades ago, he was to be the world's first super soldier in service to Mother Russia. Instead, he spent the last 30 years in a tomb. And while he cannot currently avenge himself on the man he holds responsible, he will content himself with inflicting pain upon his comrades. So you could probably have skipped the first two issues in this 4-issue arc and been completely brought up to speed there, but it was still fun. Like, never turn down reading a Jim Lee drawn comic book. It's just, you shouldn't do it either way. So like Omega Red comes in and he kind of makes quick work of the X-Men because he starts releasing his death factor pheromones. He's like, three mutants at once. Like, I could fight one at a time. Like, I can go toe to toe with Wolverine, but it's still like a one-on-one. That's easy. 3-on-1. Not so much. I'll just release my pheromones into the air and take these guys out. So he does. And then from there we go and we check in with Maverick and Wolverine. At this point, Maverick is still trying to kind of wake Wolverine up to kind of kickstart his healing factor. And when he does that, he injects him with like some adrenaline type stuff, neuroepinephrine, and it's enough to, for whatever reason, like jog Logan's memory again. And we see another longer flashback sequence. This time we actually get like 2 pages of flashback in a row. And so we get to see a little bit more of the story. So this time it picks up. It's got Wolverine and Maverick and the third member of the team. They've got the scientist Janice, and they have the carbonadium synthesizer in their possession. So all they have to do now is escape, but they're running away from Omega Red, and they've pretty much been chased all the way up to the 10th floor. And like I mentioned, you know, in the last flashback sequence, Wolverine was kind of jogged back to the present when Omega Red busted up through the floor. So we get to see now what happens after Omega Red starts busting through the floor back then. And what happens is the third member of the team, they're like, we need to escape. We have to jump out of the window. And if we jump out of the window, you know, the doctor's going to die, which means if we want to keep her alive, then we're going to have to go a different way. And so he pretty much tells her like, you're a liability here. And he shoots her in cold blood. And at that point, Maverick yells Creed. And so we find out, oh, that other dude was Sabretooth. Okay. So it was Wolverine, Sabretooth, and Maverick. And of course, Maverick and Logan are like real mad that Creed just did that. But either way, like they they kind of jump out of the window because they don't really have any other choice, you know? Omega Red finally finishes busting up through the ground, and Sabretooth just throws a bunch of grenades, and he's like, all right, well, these grenades are about to go off, so let's jump out the window. And they do. Like, they jump out the 10th floor window, and they all survive. And, you know, obviously, we comic readers know, well, obviously, Wolverine survives because he's got a healing factor. Same thing with Sabretooth. But we don't really know that yet. And apparently no one on the team, like, they don't really know that they're mutants, and they don't know that the other members are mutants. They were like, oh, weird, we survived, cool. And so the flashback ends. Again, we check in on that weird long shot story. We actually get like 4 pages of it, but I'm just skipping over that stuff right now. So we've checked in with, you know, Blue Team A, and we've checked in with Wolverine. So now we're checking in with Blue Team B. This team is the Gambit, Rogue, and Psylocke team, and they're at like a different part of the compound. I don't know if like they went to the top and they're going, working their way from the top down, and the other team working their way from the bottom up, or vice versa, or maybe they're coming in, you know, east and west or north and south, whatever. Either way, the team had split up, and so now Gambit, Rogue, and Psylocke are going up against a bunch of Hand Ninja, as well as Fenris themselves. And so, of course, Fenris, they are mutant siblings who have the power to do certain things, but if they're, like, holding hands, you know, like, if they're touching skin, then their powers are amplified. If you've ever seen the TV series The Gifted, which I liked, it wasn't the best show, and it did get canceled after 2 seasons, which I thought was unfortunate because I liked it. But Fenris was actually like a major part of the story. Like the two of the main characters were Lauren and Andy Strucker. And it turns out they were the grandchildren of the original Fenris, Andrea and Andreas, who were alive during like World War II. And so, you know, they eventually fled and they had a child, and then or I guess they were the great grandchildren. Because they had a kid, and then that kid had a kid, and then that kid was their dad. But yeah, it was fun when they started doing that. But they did. It showed the powers. Like, each of them had their own kind of powers, and they can do stuff. But like, if they were holding hands, or if their skin was touching, they were able to amplify one another's powers. And it gave them like this really destructive, it was just this massively destructive power. And, you know, that's straight from the comics. That's exactly what happens. Basically, they say that, like, yeah, we each can do our own thing, but, you know, if we hold hands, it amplifies our bioelectric power, which is just this like destructive energy field that they can release. So they do. But it doesn't take out Rogue because she's super strong. It doesn't take out Gambit, although it does kind of knock him down because he was the closest one, and he's like, he's not passed out, but he's like on the verge of passing out. And Psylocke somehow managed to just like dodge the blast. I don't know if she like just like jumped behind a ninja and let the ninja take all of it for her. Either way, like, it didn't do, I think, as much as they expected it was going to do. But either way, so it's like, all right, cool. Like, it's Fenris kind of wasted their power here, and, you know, it didn't really do a whole lot. So by this point, Matsuo arrived, and he has psionic control over Psylocke. He has control over Betsy because of her whole thing when she made all of the X-Men go through the Siege Perilous way back when they were in the Outback, which we actually covered 2 episodes ago for Lady Deathstrike Month. After she has them all go through there, she actually wakes up in the body of like a Japanese assassin. Turns out they like swapped bodies for some reason by going through the Siege Perilous. But because of that, Matsuo has this like power over her because he has power over that body. It's a whole long thing. It's real weird. It was never really a satisfying explanation of how it all went down. And it's stuff that like still affects her. Like, even though she's back in her British body and regular Psylocke is actually now back in her original Japanese body, there's still all kinds of weird stuff like between those two characters because of this. But either way, Matsuo has this weird control. And so Betsy ends up turning against Rogue and Gambit and kind of taking him out, you know, knocking him down with like a psychic knife. But because of that, Betsy actually has a psychic rapport built up with Logan. And that ultimately jogs Logan awake. That like that shock, that like psychic backlash from Betsy losing control of herself, that is enough to kind of shock Wolverine awake. And I love this because he grabs Maverick by the face and he pops his two outer claws. You know, I love when they do that where he's like, should I pop the third one, bub? You know, that sort of thing. So he does that. And Maverick is pretty much like, uh-oh, like Wolverine doesn't know me. I can tell from the look in his eye that he's telling the truth. But, you know, we used to work for the CIA, him and I, and Creed and stuff. And we were like this international CIA team and everything. Until, you know, Sabretooth snaps. You know, Sabretooth snapped and Logan left and the team fell apart. And then we get yet another flashback. We actually find out that moment, you know, where Creed killed the scientist and they all jumped out the window. Like that was the straw that broke the camel's back. So they were, you know, extracted from this river in Germany. And during the debriefing, the guy who was in charge was like, you guys all failed at your mission and all this. And so Wolverine's like, we wouldn't have failed if Creed didn't do this. And Creed's like, you know, I had to kill her. And Wolverine's like, no, you didn't. And so he just walks away, you know. Creed killed someone, he didn't agree with it, and he just walked away. Kind of like he does in X-Men Origins Wolverine, you know, that when they're in, I think it's like Vietnam or whatever. No, I think it's later than that. But either way, they're somewhere in some village, and Stryker tells, I forget who, probably Creed, to, you know, do what he's going to do. And Wolverine's like, hey, I don't kill people. And he just walks away, and they let him walk. So there you go. Kind of a precursor to that version of Team X. Either way, Maverick realizing that Wolverine doesn't really remember all this stuff, rather than just like telling him all this, he's just like, my name is Maverick. I'm a representative of the German government, and I'm here to help. You know, there's something that I need to get my hands on, and you're kind of the key. So let's go in there and fight off these bad guys. And then weirdly enough, as they're kind of talking, Wolverine sees on a monitor in this little base that this monitor is like connected to a camera that's actually pointing at where the upstarts have their headquarters. And who would show up at the headquarters, you know, working for Fenris? None other than Creed, Sabretooth himself. Which, of course, explains why he's on the cover of this issue, but still. It's all a bit serendipitous, really. But either way, Creed showing up, that kind of gets both Wolverine and Maverick to be like, all right, we have to go in. We got to go save our friends. I don't even know if they know the X-Men are there yet. Either way, they're like, we got to get in there and stop them, whatever it is they're doing. Meanwhile, we actually see Sabretooth. He's kind of talking to Matsuo and Fenris and Omega Red. And he's pretty much saying like, yeah, you know, I'll work for you guys. Like, I don't like Wolverine either. And I certainly don't like all these X-Men goons. So, I'll do your dirty work. And... And like, that's pretty much it. I think at this point in the comics as well, we had gotten at least close to the Shiva scenario, because at this point, Cyclops mentions that Sabretooth has an army of killer androids on his tail. And I think that was part of the Shiva scenario that saw, you know, Wolverine kind of track down his Weapon X roots and stuff. But maybe it was all kind of happening concurrently and that storyline hadn't quite finished up yet, which would explain why Wolverine still doesn't really remember certain things. Like by this point, he would have known, I think, about Maverick had he already discovered all that Weapon X stuff. So I have to go back and look at when those issues were being published. But either way, it's like fairly early on in that storyline or maybe even close to the end. But so that's why it's so weird that Sabretooth shows up. Either way, like, Sabretooth and Psylocke are then ordered by Matsuo to track down Wolverine because they have a feeling that he's close by. Like, he was pretty injured. He jumped out of a window and then disappeared. Like, he can't have gotten very far. Even if it's been like a day or two since that happened, he's probably holed up somewhere healing. So Sabretooth and Psylocke are on their way, and they actually find him pretty quickly. Like, it turns out that Maverick was just like chilling in the sewers. He had like a little sewer base down there, and it didn't take Sabretooth and Psylocke long to track them down. And they, like, almost immediately, once they catch up to them, take him out. Like, we don't even get to see the action. Like, Wolverine pops his claws, Maverick kind of like cocks his cool looking gun, and he's like, all right, Sabretooth, let's throw down, bub. And then we get one panel of red and black, and it just says, like, actually it takes about 30 seconds. The outcome is never really in question. And we see Sabretooth is like contacting base, and he's like, all right, man, well, I got Wolverine and Maverick for you. And Omega Red's like, oh, that's great. Like, I can finally figure out where my carbonadium synthesizer is. And, you know, that will actually help me, because if I have the carbonadium synthesizer, then I don't know. He can like feed off the life force of the carbonate. I'm not really quite sure exactly why he needs it. I know that eventually later on in various storylines, it's explained, but all we know is that, like, if he has the carbonadium synthesizer, then he can control his death field, something like that. Maybe like the carbonadium tentacles he has are poisoning him or something, and so that's why he has to rely on his death factor to survive, like, you know, to take the energy, not just as a weapon, but like as a survival mechanism. And if he has the C synthesizer, then he won't be sickened by the carbonadium anymore, and so he won't, it's something like that. As we explore the character this month, I'm sure we'll figure it out. And so that takes us to the end of issue 6. And issue 7 starts off, again, like I had mentioned, it's the exact same creative team as issue 6. So no mysteries there. And it pretty much just, like I said, like they have all done so far, it just picks up right where the last one had left off. So Wolverine, at the end of the last issue, being captured by Sabretooth and brought back to the Upstarts, is now contained yet again. And he's going through another round of like questioning and torture, where they're trying to figure out where the heck the carbonadium synthesizer is. We do get a little bit of information here from Dr. Cornelius and Matsuo that say, without the carbonadium synthesizer, then they can't complete the experiment, the process that began 30 years ago that would negate the death factor. So there you have it. Like, that's why he needs it. It says it synthesizes the only metal capable of negating the death factor. So maybe Omega Red's death factor, if he doesn't kill other people with it, then he kills himself with it. And so the carbonadium kind of holds it at bay, maybe something like that. It's almost like the opposite of Wolverine's healing factor, either way. So there you go. They start breaking into Wolverine's mind to try to find the location of the synthesizer. And we then cut in to check on Maverick. And we see that Sabretooth is taking Maverick into the area with the rest of the X-Men. And something's wrong with Sabretooth. He keeps repeating the exact same thing over and over, which was the last thing he said after he knocked out Wolverine. So you're starting to get a little suspicious that either Sabretooth likes to just toot his own horn nonstop, or there's something else going on. And Maverick kind of has this little grin on his face. But before we can see what's going on, we do check in just a little bit more with the Upstarts and their whole thing with Wolverine. They're like forcing him to relive those memories of that night, you know, but, you know, unfortunately they can't really figure it out. Like, they can't find the memory where Logan actually took the carbonadium synthesizer and did something with it. But in the one memory, as they're in this river, after they've jumped out and escaped, somehow Logan managed to bring the body with him. And as he's holding her body and they're all in the river waiting for extraction, he says to her that he has one last assignment for her, even though by this point she's dead. And so that's enough where Matsuo's like, aha, I figured out where it is. And no one else like is smart enough to clue in on that. Like, they all were exploring Wolverine's memories and heard him say that. And then immediately Matsuo was like, I figured it out. And everyone else was like, what are you talking about? Where could it be? So we'll just leave that mystery as it is. Clearly Fenris and Dr. Cornelius and Omega Red are not as smart as Matsuo. But like right at that moment, now that they've discovered the location of where the carbonadium synthesizer is, they're like, all right, Dr. Cornelius, like, time to kill Wolverine. We don't need him anymore. And we'll get all the sweet points for this weird game that we're playing. And that's just enough where Betsy, Psylocke, immediately starts attacking everybody. And they're like, what the heck? And she's like, yeah, I'm not really controlled by Matsuo. The whole thing was a feint. Like, I've been in psychic contact with Wolverine since we got into Germany, suckas. And like, this was the plan all along, to get in here and, you know, figure out what you guys wanted, point you in the wrong direction, and then like beat the crap out of you guys. So that's exactly what she does. Like, she takes out Matsuo, she takes out Fenris, she takes out Dr. Cornelius. She's actually fighting Omega Red too. And Omega Red's like, don't be foolish, woman. Like, you're no match for me. I have my death factor and I'm doing all these things to you. And she's like, no, you're not. You only think you are telepathically because I'm telling your brain to think that you are, but you're not. Like, bro, you are so outmatched here. And she actually starts like to beat Omega Red and everything. And then Dr. Cornelius is like, oh crap. And so he sounds an alarm because he's like, great. Like, in this fight, if Wolverine escapes, like, we're all dead because he's Wolverine. And at that point, Maverick is like, all right, cool. Well, there's my cue. So he immediately takes out the other hand ninja that are escorting him and with Sabretooth. He takes them out and like gets out of his shackles, but nothing happens. Like, Sabretooth is just chilling. And we find out that like, not only was Betsy pretending that she was being controlled by Matsuo, but she was actually controlling Sabretooth this whole time too. So Maverick and Sabretooth, they go and they start to rescue the other X-Men. Like, meanwhile, Psylocke is here taking everybody out. And unfortunately, you know, we're kind of getting, now it's like kind of back and forth, like three panels of this, three panels of that, three panels of this. So while Betsy is busy, you know, psychic knifing Fenris, Matsuo actually knocks her unconscious. And of course, she gets knocked unconscious the second that Maverick and Sabretooth show up where the other X-Men are being held captive. And Maverick is able to free the Beast, but he's not able to free any of the other X-Men before Betsy's psychic control wears off. And then Sabretooth attacks Maverick. But like I said, it was enough for Beast to get unlocked. And then Beast immediately frees Jubilee, who then throws fireworks in Sabretooth's face to blind him so that the other X-Men can get free. And then we go and we check in with Betsy, who's been knocked out. And they're all like, all right, quick, like, we got to take care of Logan, like I said. And by this point, Logan is healed enough. He breaks out of his shackles. He jumps down and he pops his claws and he immediately starts fighting Omega Red. But like I said, you know, by this point, the rest of the X-Men are free. And so the rest of the X-Men have now caught up. You know, they've all finally reunited. And it looks awesome. Like, we get this really cool, like, three quarters of a splash page with Cyclops and Maverick. I don't know. It's just really cool looking. It's like Cyclops at his raddest, you know, and you can tell that he just like unleashes this blast and just knocks Matsuo completely off guard and everything. And then Gambit does the same thing to Andrea von Strucker. And then Rogue comes flying up through the floor and like bashing Omega Red in the back and everything. it's all really cool. But ultimately, the building itself starts to collapse because of, you know, Rogue and her battle with Omega Red and Cyclops just letting loose with optic blasts and Maverick just shooting whatever. So the building starts to collapse. Naturally, all of the X-Men are on one side. All of the villains are on the other side. So they have to go their separate ways. You know, it's now they have to kind of, it's fight or flight. And so in this case, they all have to choose flight. So the X-Men escape their way and the villains escape the other way. So after all is said and done, they are now at the German embassy because apparently the X-Men, they could just show up and be like, hey, do you mind if we just like crash here for a little while, guys? It'll be cool. So they're all hanging out. They've all showered, even though I like this too, because it's like they've all showered because they've all got like towels wrapped around their shoulders and stuff. But they're all still wearing their X-Men uniforms. So I don't know if they just like shower in their uniforms or if they take them off, shower, put them back on, but then grab a towel and like start pat drying through. I don't know, whatever. Either way, it's really fun. And so at this point, Wolverine's like, I really appreciate you guys like getting my back and coming and helping me out. Like, yeah, Maverick was here for me, weirdly enough. We ended up getting out, but we probably couldn't have done it without you guys. And Wolverine says, a fun line here where he says, it's funny, before joining this group, there wasn't a scrap I couldn't claw my way out of solo. That much ain't changed, but it's comforting to know I got friends, family even, covering my back. And as he's walking, because he tells the X-Men, like, I got one last like loose end to tie up real quick, and so I'll join you guys back in New York when all is said and done. And so, you know, Cyclops is like, do what you got to do. And if you need us, just call. So that's when Wolverine does that cool little line. And so as he's walking away, and even Cyclops is like, now and forever, Logan, whether you want it or not. So just like a fun moment between Wolverine and Cyclops right here. And then of course we have the last little epilogue that lasts for like two more pages. And they are in Germany at the grave of Janice. I missed her last name if they said it. And it turns out that she was buried with the carbonadium synthesizer. That was what Wolverine meant when he's like, hey, I've got one more mission for you. That was what clued in Matsuo, even though everyone else didn't realize it. So Matsuo and the Hand and Dr. Cornelius arrive at the grave of Janice. And this is what's weird. Like, they dig up her coffin and they go to open her coffin and out pops Wolverine. And he's like, surprise, bub. And he starts, you know, fighting the Hand Ninja, and Maverick shows up and he's fighting the Hand Ninja as well. And then Matsuo and Cornelius make their escape. And then Wolverine gives the carbonadium synthesizer to Maverick. And he's like, as far as I'm concerned, bub, this is yours. And that is it. That is how the story ends. So there you go. That is X-Men numbers 4-7. That is the first appearance of Omega Red. Interesting stuff. Like, it's a Jim Lee. All four issues are drawn by Jim Lee, and you can't go wrong with that. A lot of really great action in these. And yeah, like I mentioned, you know, they like, as soon as Claremont's off the book, they're like, all right, man, let's start mining Wolverine's past. But like, small stories like this that bring, they bring additional questions. They answer a few, but they ask more. They introduce interesting and fun new villains that Wolverine gets to take on. I like that Omega Red isn't just like a Russian version of Sabretooth. Like, he has some things about him that make him unique, but are also similar to Wolverine. You know, Wolverine had a healing factor, and so they were able to put the metal into his body and turn him into a weapon, whereas with Omega Red, he kind of has the opposite of a healing factor. He has a death factor, and if they put the metal in his body, it'll save him from that death factor so that he can become a weapon. Like, you know, there's parallels, but not quite the same. It's, you know, evil twisted versions, sort of like a, you know, a funhouse mirror. So I like this introduction to Omega Red, and I'm really excited for the rest of the month. I've got a couple of stories that I'm looking forward to covering. You know, we have one more story that actually takes place like only a year later. Like, I think it's like X-Men issues 18 through like 22 or 23, something like that. Like it's very soon after his first appearance that he shows up again in another really interesting story. So I'll be covering that next week. And then of course he factors into a lot of the early X-Men, or not X-Men, but Wolverine Origins, of that ongoing series that bridged the gap between, you know, Wolverine's life, you know, his early life in Canada to like pretty much from like the Weapon X, like up to where he gets into the Weapon X program, right? Like, so it covers like the World War One, World War Two kind of stuff, like the 30s, 40s, early 50s. It covers a lot of the stuff that Wolverine was doing during those decades. And of course, knowing that Omega Red is from, you know, 30 years in the past during Wolverine's CIA days, like, you'd be hard pressed to do stories there and not explain, you know, how these guys first met and all that. And so we'll be covering some of those stories later on this month. I'm looking forward to it. A lot of really great stuff to cover when it comes to Omega Red. Bub, if you like the show and want to keep the conversation going, you can follow me on Instagram at TalkinSnicked, or you can reach out to me via email, TalkSnicked@gmail.com. And if you are so inclined, you can join the Discord server for TalkinSnicked. That's right, we have our very own Discord server, and there's like 10 of us over there. So I'm not bragging here or anything, but there's like 10 of us over there. So follow the link in the show notes, come join the Discord server, continue the conversation, and just share your love of Wolverine and the X-Men with me and everyone else. One last thing, if you stay tuned to the very end of this episode, you can hear the exclusive track Back from the Dead. It was an original piece of music composed and performed by Retcon X, a very talented musician who created a bunch of original music inspired by the X-Men. Now, he hasn't done a whole lot of stuff lately, but you can still check out all of his stuff on either his YouTube channel or his Spotify playlist. So if you like the track Back from the Dead, then go check him out as well. Until next time, bubs.